I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. I'm joined by, you know what? You decide your own adjective. What adjective? I have to come up every time with something.
Can we decide each other's?
Oh, I like that. All right. So you introduce him, and then he'll introduce you. So go.
The jolly Father Drew Hoffman.
Good standby.
We were at a baseball game the other day, and I think it was Father Ed Herzog said somebody asked him, who's the priest at WCU? It's the chubby jolly guy.
Oh, no. Ouch.
And joining me is one-time national seminary basketball championship most valuable player.
Whoa, I didn't know that. MVP.
It's true. I think it was a 4-inch little trophy. Yeah, it was amazing.
Do you still have it?
Yeah.
I think it's at mom and dad somewhere. Yeah.
You need to bust that out. That needs to be like the most prominent thing on your desk when people walk into the office.
Show some authority, you know, and I got to tell somebody like it is. Like, this is coming from an MVP.
We have Chad's graduation diplomas and every inch of this room, yes. But we don't have an actual real accomplishment, a national championship.
Fewer people probably have that than have copies of my diploma.
That's true.
So,
that
I mean, it's
true.
A big deal. Well, we are recording today in the studio of St. Joseph Cupertino because our guest today is Father Joe Guile, who, in addition to wearing many hats at Newman University, is also the Director of Academic Formation for the men here at the St. Joseph House of Formation. So welcome, Joe.
Thanks very much.
I'm assuming, though, you're probably not named after Joseph Cupertino.
No, there's always been a Joe in my dad's side.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like fourth generation Joe.
All right.
So,
Well, he is a good saint for someone in the academic field, even though he was not academic himself. If you don't know the story of St. Joseph Cupertino, he struggled with education his whole life. And I think when it came to be like the final test before you were ordained a priest at that time, there was one question he felt like he knew really well. And that was the one question he got. So he passed all of his exams and was able to be ordained.
So Father Chad, he's buried right next to the Gregorian University in Rome.
Is he really?
And so all of the Americans from the house, they go down to his tomb before they have to take fire.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We had a small shrine to him at Mount St. Mary's, and during finals week, there would always be candles lit.
Is that where you went? Did you go to the Greg?
I went to the Greg.
Okay. Yeah. So he helped you out, I'm sure.
On numerous occasions. In fact, on my doctoral defense, there's three judges. And one guy just moderates. He never asks a question. But my day, he decided to ask a question. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's this going to be? And just that morning, I went over some notes. I thought, yeah, that's probably not important, but I should look at it. That was exactly what he asked.
Wow.
So that was kind of a
Your
Joseph
own
Cupertino
moment.
Yeah. So I hit it out of the park on that question because it's like, let me at it. You
know? Sometimes the saints just choose this podcast, I think, for the right. So that was was the right one to go for.
Okay. What was your dissertation on?
Dei Verbum, okay. Vatican II.
Yeah. Do you use it much? I mean, do you pull from it very often?
I have not.
Okay.
Except I'm thinking about doing a class for the seminarians maybe next year on Pope Benedict as interpreter of Vatican II.
Oh,
I'd sit in the back of that class.
You'd get some priests coming to that one, actually.
And so finally, maybe, you know, 20 years later, it's got to be put to practical use here.
What was it like to study in Rome? I feel like for seminarians that listen, that's like, it's like, oh, I would just wish someday I could study in Rome. I'm sure it's awesome and maybe some like not so great parts, but what was that like?
Yeah, no, I loved it when I was there.
You were ordained a priest at the time though, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which I hear is a lot better than as a seminarian.
I'm biased, obviously, but I would not want to have seminarians over there, but to go there as a priest and be able to celebrate Mass in all those churches. St. Peter's, you can go in any morning at 7 o'clock and celebrate Mass. And yeah, no, it was a great experience.
And you're fluent in Italian?
I can order a pizza and beer.
That's fun.
They're real essential things. I can get around. I can get around all right.
What I always hear from the seminarians that are over there and this has some exceptions, but it's basically like, I'm not going to complain because I live in the eternal city, but I want to come home. Yeah. That's usually what I experience from the Sims. Like, it's very cool. Obviously, we see incredible stuff and Surf with the Pope and all of these things. So you are going to think I'm a tool when I complain about this. But I haven't been home in 18 months, and this isn't the church that I'm going to serve in X, Y, and Z.
Right. Yeah. No, that rings true. I was there on two different stints and 2 years each, and both time I was very much ready to come home.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great, but to live in Italy, it's kind of ridiculous to complain about it, but things don't work like they do here, and it can be kind of frustrating. I was ready both times.
Do you still enjoy going back to Rome? Because I know at least one priest of the diocese who will remain nameless but lives in this house, who has studied at Rome, I will say, like, I have no desire to go back to Rome.
No, I love it there. Okay. And so at Newman, we alternate now between Israel and Rome.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
So every other year, we're taking students to Rome. And
Cool.
How does a priest that is tangentially connected to Newman get related to that? Because those are two of the places I've been meaning to spend more time in my life.
You would be welcome any and every time.
Do you guys do it in the summertime or over
Christmas?
It's always
spring break.
Yeah.
Spring break.
So mid-March. Okay. It's a great time to be in Israel. Rome, last time I went, it was surprisingly cold. So we'll see. I've gone in October, which was gorgeous. But that was the weekend that Pope Francis decided to consecrate the world to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And there were a million tourists in town.
That's a lot.
It was a lot. But other than that, no, I love it there.
Well, why don't to fill in some of our listeners, what other positions? So you've been a priest how many years now, Joe?
It'll be 35 years, May 28th.
Woo! Hey, congrats. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And so what roles have you served here in the diocese in those 35 years?
Oh, well, I started at a place you know very well, at St. Mary's Colgan in Pittsburgh.
I was down there this weekend for a wedding, and I told them we were going to have you on the podcast, and several people got very excited about it. And one even related the story. We like to think we're kind of a home for Father Joe.
That's cool.
So you are still fondly remembered down there.
Well, I'll tell you, I had the best April Fool's joke played on me. I was down there on April Fool's Day, and Father LeBenz comes out. I'm just concelebrating, and he says, "It's my great pleasure to announce that Father Joe Guile has just been named the pastor."
I'm
not ready to fall out of my chair. Ooh. I'm like, "What?" And he goes, "April Fool's." Like, oh, yeah. You. Yeah. That was the best one.
That's good.
But that's where good. I started. I taught 5 years at St. Mary's Colgan.
And coached?
Well, we call it coached, I guess, but I didn't have a clue what I was doing.
You are still a better than a seminarian basketball MVP. You are a state winning track coach, right? Wow.
Well, that is true. We did win the state track meet that last year. It's Colgan's only state track title, and we don't have a track. We just ran around the block.
Were you the head track coach?
Not head. I was the assistant. Chuck Smith was both the football coach and then the track coach. But it was tremendous.
Do you have any, distances you were especially good at coaching? What was your expertise level?
I was the distance coach, so it was just like, head out.
Go run.
Keep going.
Let's go run. Run more. Yeah. Pick it up.
Go to Maldelli and back.
But no, it was a great, great first assignment for me. Then I went to Rome for the first time, and then I came back and was at the Spiritual Life Center for 7 years, lived in several parishes, but worked there. And then I went back to Rome to finish up. And then I've been at Newman since 2004, been pastor twice during that time. I was at Church of the Holy Spirit in Goddard for only 10 months, which was kind of odd.
You pastor number two, three?
I was the second pastor.
Second pastor.
Father H was the founding pastor.
That's right.
So I placed him there. Then after that, we were working on the seminary study. And so I was living at Blessed Sacrament doing that. I was there 4 years helping out, and then was pastor in Andale for 2 great years. Then that's when Bishop Jacobs left. And so Noreen Carrucci, the president, called and said, would you come back to Newman full time? I said, well, I've been here full time.
No way.
I was just like, oh yeah. I go, but
yeah,
I go, whatever you want to work out, it's fine with me. So Bob Hamburger was the administrator. So Bob was retiring. So I took his place at the convent, and I've been back at Newman full time, and also the chaplain to the Sisters of St. Joseph currently. So yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
I like to tell the story that you talk about being at the Spiritual Life Center. That was when our paths first crossed in my life. And Joe hired me for my very first job. I was 14 at the time, and they needed a maintenance worker at Spiritual Life Center. And my cousin had the job for several years, and he was leaving. So I don't know if he ever said anything or just gave me the office number. So I called, and I spoke to you on the phone, and you hired me sight unseen. And I worked there the next 4 years. But I do remember you coming out often, because you had a background in geology. That's right.
That was my college degree, yeah.
And I remember you coming out to talk about soil and planting different things and having those discussions. But to your credit, too, is you also gave me permission to kind of peruse the library whenever I wanted at the Spiritual Life Center. Yeah. And one of my summer jobs was watering trees. And you're, yeah, just take a book out with you. So I read a number of Lives of the Saints while I was out just driving in the summertime watering trees, because you encouraged me to do that at 15 and 16 years old. And it was very helpful at that time.
Good.
So
what do you remember of young Chad Arnold?
Oh, he's just like he is today.
more hair on top. Yeah.
A little bit more hair. No, in fact, I just ran into another former Life Center, Patty Cook.
Oh my gosh.
She was down in Frontenac. I was covering masses down there. She works down in that area, and I ran into Patty down there.
She was the queen of the practical jokes.
Yes, she was.
And I remember one time she put Scotch tape on the receiver of the telephone. And the very first call I received was from Bishop Gerber. And I'm saying, hello, Bishop. Yeah, Father Guile. I go, Bishop, could you speak up? I can't quite hear you. And I go, Bishop, I'm sorry. I still can't quite hear you.
That's
I didn't
great.
See the tape on there until like 5 minutes into the conversation. Like, oh, Patty. No, she was great. She was a lot of fun.
Well, and it's her nephew here in the spring is going to be ordained a deacon Matthew
that's right.
Cook.
Part of our first class.
That's right.
Yeah.
First class graduate of House of Formation will be ordained deacons this spring.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, it's pretty exciting.
It is. It is. I can't believe how fast the time
right?
has gone, but yeah, it's great.
So you're the director of academic formation for the house.
Yes.
What does that mean?
I keep all the guys on track for graduation. If I can get them out of certain classes, I can do that. If they transfer courses in, I make sure they're taking all the classes required, Latin, Spanish, whatever the philosophy classes are, to stay on track for graduation, basically.
And what are you teaching at Newman and or for the SEMS?
Well, I haven't been teaching this past year. It's all been all administration. I'll just leave it at that.
It's what everybody loves, administration.
Oh, yeah. Normally, I'm dean of the School of Catholic Studies.
Okay.
And so as dean, you just have to teach one class a semester.
Yeah. But,
well, I'll just tell you, last fall, I was also dean of the School of Business.
That's what?
That's everyone's reaction.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I really wanted to keep that on the down low. So people listening to this now know, but other than that, no, we had the woman who was in charge, she was promoted and it wasn't the time to search.
Yeah.
So it was just a temporary thing. But
okay.
Because of that, I didn't teach last fall. And then I've been prepping this class for the seminarians.
Cool.
I hope to teach next year, but yeah.
So you've been there for several years. Have you noted shifts just in what the student is like? Like, I think especially if we hear a lot about COVID just changed socially and academically where students are at. Have you noticed any big changes since you started at Newman?
Yeah, yes. I mean, it was the case certainly when I started in 2004, but now everything is so completely focused on the job.
Hmm.
And that's important. You have to pay your bills once you graduate from college, but this is the case across the country. The liberal arts have really suffered.
Mm-hmm.
People think that's a waste of time or, you know, okay, if I've got to take that, I'll have to, but I'm not going to like it, that kind of thing. That wasn't really the case when I first started. So that's unfortunate, but I think that's just part of the trend in the United States right now is the liberal arts are just seen as just fluff instead of something that can really enrich a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I admit it's hard to get a job as an English major or a theology major, frankly, but there's just been a real denigration, I think, of the liberal arts over the past 20 some years. Yeah, I wish that were not the case. But I'm very proud to say that we've started a 4-semester sequence of courses on the great books. The seminarians take all of them, the Catholic, and we model them on the KU program, Dr. John Sr. And so we're starting to get some other students who are not seminarians and are, you know, double majors signing up for those. And I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud that we're kind of bucking the trend there. And I think our seminarians who complete the sequence are as well read as anybody going on to major seminary and some of these key foundational texts in the Western canon. So
those courses really fuel the dinner conversation frequently at the house, just of what the guys are reading. Cool. And I just had one guy stop by the office. I don't know if it's specific for that class, but I think it is the Diary of a Country Priest. Right. And he just finished. He's like, have you ever read this book? And I said, yeah, it's been a few years. We need to talk. I want to talk with someone about what I'm thinking about this book. And so we have a pending conversation. He's so excited about that book, which honestly, it was not one of my favorite books when I read it. I'm like, maybe I need to give it a reread.
Yeah, but I struggled through it.
I didn't love it when I read it, but he did.
Oh, good. I mean, a lot of them do have that same reaction. They kind of struggle with it. But it's like, you know, parish life.
You're
going to struggle with that too. So, I mean, you might as well have some early exposure to the extent that you can by reading this.
This is a much bigger topic, but briefly, you said that the liberal arts enrich someone's life. What does that mean, particularly if somebody is in that worldview of like, I'm going to college to get a job so I can make money so that I can afford things. And so why would I even think about extra stuff?
Again, I look at what John Sr., his approach up at KU, he knew those students were going to go be plumbers and electricians and all kinds of tradesmen. And he said, you need this. This will help you be the best one of those. It helps you grow just as a human being, but also it's, you have to have something, I think, in life besides watching Netflix when you get off work, you know? And so having this kind of formation makes one a better human being. And I think it just ennobles life. There's more than just work, as essential as that is. And that's, you know, the liberal arts, liberal in the sense that you're free. These set you free from all the demands of the workaday life. And we all need something to turn to bolster our spirits and to lift them up. And I think the liberal arts, the classics of the Western civilization can do that.
Yeah, I remember that being a novel concept for me. Like I studied engineering for a couple of years at KU, and then you go into seminary and they're talking about philosophy and knowledge for knowledge's sake. And I'm like, but so we can have skills as a priest or something, right? And so, yeah, it almost opened in my mind who I was more than just, I'm not just like someone to go make it, have a job and complete the task, but like not even as a priest, like it's a whole, like you said, understanding who I am as a human being and cultures and things like that. So yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it really evokes something from the guys rather than just a skill set, which are important and good, but reading those things brings something out of them. And I'm a big believer too in reading the classics. You know, there's a rhythm and there's a music quality to language. And so if you read those who have mastered it and you're going to be a priest, it helps with homiletic styles. It helps with, you know, learning all of those things. And so you can see that even in the house, there's actually a group of guys. They've started I don't know if you know this, there's a writing group here in the house.
Oh, I didn't know.
And so they meet every 2 weeks on Sundays after brunch. And I think there's about, it fluctuates, 6 to 8 guys. They bring in about 3 samples of writing each week, and they read each other's stuff and they comment on it. And so it's just, again, that enrichness of expression and being able to share. And it's really, I've sat in on a couple of them. It's really cool to listen to them and see where they're thinking and how they move. It's really, the next one they're going to do is they each have to write, they have a prompt and they have to do like a little short story, 200, 300 words, whatever it is on that. And then they're also putting that prompt into the chat GPT. Oh, yeah. And then they're going to try and vote if they can figure out which story belongs to which person in the group. So it actually could, it sounds really cool. I'm interested to see how that goes. Well, speaking of interesting stories, we would like you to tell us your interesting story, Joe. I am a master of segues. That's what reading classics has gotten me. Master of segues right there.
Is that Dante? That was amazing.
Poetry just flowing forth from me. As we have guests on here, Joe, we like them to be able to share their vocation story. And so I was hoping you would grace us with just kind of sharing your journey to the priesthood.
Sure. Sure. So in college, I was a geology major. So I was all about making money. I mean, certainly not proud of it now, but that was what was driving me then, was just this was a way to get rich drilling for oil in the
I always wondered what would lead you to the geology. Okay.
Well, it's even longer. I was pre-med for 2 years and then thought, I don't want to be in school the rest of my life. And
that didn't work out for you. Yeah, right.
So I had all these science credits. So I just moved into geology. Again, it was a get rich quick kind of scheme.
Where are you at school?
Wichita State. And yeah. And then, so I grew up at Blessed Sacrament Parish. And so I'm a junior in college by now. And they had such a dynamic music program at the time. Maybe 50, 60 voices up there. Father Matt McGinnis stood behind me in the baritone section. And it was just a lot of fun. And I can tell you, I knew exactly where I was standing when the call to the priesthood first came. We were practicing on Wednesday night up in the choir loft. It's dark. So no lights are on in the church, only lights up in the choir loft. And we are rehearsing a song. The title of it is "O Love That Will Not Let Me Go."
That's a great title for
it. Was a 19th century poem, and music's beautiful. And anyway, we sang through that, and the director's talking to the sopranos or whatever. So I'm not paying attention. So my eyes are pulled out into the dark church, and then my eyes get pulled to the sanctuary lamp. And then my eyes get pulled to the tabernacle, and I just was stunned, and I mouthed out loud, "You want me to do what?"
Hmm.
And that was the first time the idea of being a priest ever entered my mind. I didn't hear anything, but it was Jesus talking to me. There was a presence, and it was so obvious that he wanted me to do this. And it did not fit the plan. I was going to be a millionaire as a, you know, a successful oilman here in the state of Kansas. So I wish I could say that I called the vocation director the next day, but I did not do that. The beautiful thing at Blessed Sacrament was Father Vic Bieberly had just started perpetual adoration. It was the first parish in town to have perpetual adoration. So I took this very conflicting idea and I wrestled with it in the Adoration Chapel for about a year before I finally said yes to it. And I am, of course, so glad I did. You guys all know, I mean, being a priest is so much better than anything we could have ever thought up all on our own.
Amen.
I mean, just the plan I had for my life was so paltry compared to what God has done for me as a priest. So, That was the call to the priesthood, and I had that song at my first Mass, of course.
Oh, did you really?
Cool. Yeah, wow. The choir sang it.
That's awesome.
And it was a graced moment, to be sure.
What's the title of the song again?
"Oh, Love That Will Not Let Me Go."
I'm going to look that one up, because I don't know if I've ever heard it before. It's not familiar to me.
Yeah, John Ness Beck was the composer. So there are different versions of it, but that was the one that we sang there at Blessed Sacrament.
What year did you join seminary then?
So I went to seminary January of 83.
Okay. And where'd you start out?
The Josephinum.
Was that just been 4 years at that time, or did you have to do pre-theology in 83?
So it was pre-theology, but the Josephinum was on trimesters, so I kind of got that year squeezed in, and I was always off sequence, but but I got through in 4.5.
4.5, okay. So you would have been ordained then in 88. 88.
Yeah. It's part of the Marian year 6. That was the moniker.
What?
What does that mean?
It sounds kind of awesome. Yeah.
So Sister Cecilia Bush was the editor of the Catholic Advance, and she gave us that name. And so Pope John Paul II, St. John Paul II, established the Marian year in 1987, 87 to 88. And so since there were 6 of us ordained that year, and so we were the Marian year 6.
Like SEAL Team 6. That's awesome.
Who else was in your class?
So it would be John Lansrath, H. Setter, Charlie Sollentrop, Andy Seiler, Kent Hemberger, and myself. Wow.
You and John are both pretty musically talented. And does H do music?
H does.
I thought he did.
H did a master's in music at Friends.
That's right.
And he was a conductor at Mount St. Mary's.
Whoa.
That's right.
I think there was some big university or anniversary mass at the Mount, and Bishop Gerber came back, and H was up there conducting, and Bishop Gerber wanted him to put a Wichita sign on his back. He didn't do that, but no, H is really talented.
What was your seminary experience?
I loved it. I loved it. It was... Again, I was a scientist in school, but I was always taking these liberal arts classes. I thought I had to get a job. I had to make money. My heart wasn't in it, so I was doing all these liberal arts classes. So then the chance to study the liberal arts without any pressure of getting a job, I mean, I loved it. Yeah, the Josephinum had great academics then. I don't know what the place is like now. Not that it's, I don't mean to contrast that between then and now,
sure.
But there were some tremendous professors there, and no, I loved it.
Was there an area particularly that you just enjoyed studying in?
I did scripture studies there, okay. And we had a really dynamic Old Testament professor, so I did a paper on Psalm 95. That, and then Bernard Lonergan. I was kind of a Lonergan nut there for about a year.
I don't know Lonergan.
No, they call him Transcendental Thomas, which is a mouthful, but he was...
Also be a great band name.
But, yeah. But it was, he's hard to explain him. He's like a combination of Thomas Aquinas and modern psychology. He's kind of a theory of everything in his main books called Insight. And that's epistemology, I suppose. It's a little bit of everything in that book.
I've always felt personally weak on my Thomism, so church talk a little bit, but because at my time at the Mount, we had a tremendous Thomas in Father Zilla, but the moral theology at the Mount at that time had a strong Germain Grisez focus, and so we were required to study more Grisez than or Thomas through the lens of Grisez, which is an unusual lens to study through.
That
so
does sound, yeah.
So it was kind of my Thomism is a little lacking, frankly.
Well, it's not an area that I am very strong in either. I mean, again, we did that book and we did an independent study. Kent Hemberger was part of the group, and it was one-on-one with the professor. We did kind of like tutorial style classes, and I loved it. But no, I would not in any way consider myself a Thomist.
And it was you and Kent at Josephinum, or any of the other guys at the Josephinum of that six?
No, just Kent and I were in that.
Okay.
And then others started coming after us, but we were in that first class.
You guys were the first class at Josephine at that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Huh. So Bishop Gerber, when he came back to Wichita, he sent us. Our class was the first class to go to the seminary under Bishop Gerber.
Mm.
So he had just arrived, maybe 82, I guess, maybe.
Was he pretty involved with you guys at that point? Or? Because I only knew Bishop Gerber really at the tail end of his episcopacy was when I was kind of starting at seminary. And even then, Bishop Olmsted was really taking over the brunt of things as coadjutor.
No, Bishop Gerber was very much a father figure to us. And I don't know if you guys knew him or...
I used to do yard work for him every once in a while.
Okay, well, that you would get a sense of him. But he had just this amazing one-on-one connection with people. Yeah, he was... When you look at what the impact that one man can have on a place, what he did while he was bishop here was pretty unprecedented, really. And we enjoy a lot of benefits that really have come to us through Bishop Gerber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a state-of-the-art science building at Newman.
Oh, that's right.
Only because of Bishop Gerber. Uh-huh. And since we were talking about the sushi pay earlier, I'll tell you that story. So for about a year and a half, they wanted to name the building after him, and he refused. So Bishop Jakels was bishop then.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, I don't want anything. And he'd been really consistent over the years. He didn't want anything named for him. Spiritual Life Center, nowhere. He did not want his name to appear. And frankly, the fundraising floundered for about a year and a half. And they asked him three times, and he said no three times. And then one day he is praying the sushi pay of St. Ignatius. Take, Lord, receive my memory, my understanding, my entire life. And then he said, I never would have thought you'd want my name.
Mm.
He'd given everything to the Lord. He thought, okay. So he called Noreen Karochi up, and he said, yeah, you can name it after me.
I didn't know that story.
And then Bishop Jakels moved on And so we were without a bishop there for a year. So he felt like he could come to the fore again. And he did. Mm-hmm. And he single-handedly raised almost easily over half the money for that place that now bears his name and is a great statue of him you know, out on the west entrance. So,
yeah, if you're ever on Newman campus and you've not seen that statue, you need to swing over and take a look at it. It's a great statue.
Yeah, but I mean, KU uses our facilities for the med school because they're, and we owe that to Bishop Gorman. That's just the last of so many things he did for us as a diocese.
That is a unique, with that prayer though, that you want my name. I'd never heard this story. I love that. I'm going to have to, I've got Holy Hour later today. I'm going to pray with that a little bit. I like that.
I don't think he'd want your name, Chad.
Chad.
Well, on that note, well, thanks so much for being with us today, Joe, and sharing your story with us. And thanks to you out there listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I've got the final word today, and I'm going to just share that prayer that Father Joe was talking about, the Suscipe by St. Ignatius of Loyola. It goes, "Take, O Lord, and receive all my liberty, my memory, my understanding, and my whole will. Thou hast given me all that I am and all that I possess. I surrender all to Thee, that Thou mayest dispose of it according to Thy will. Give me only Thy love and Thy grace. With these I will be rich enough, and I will have no more to desire." See you next week.